Hi, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, Leon, you need to change your name.
You know what? Let me do that. Let me do that right now.
Was like, wait a minute.
Kind of don't look like Mark, but there we go.
Now we know.
Yes. How are you this morning?
So far, so good. It's early though, and the other people in this house are still lounging around, so they haven't been demanding breakfast or anything just yet.
Yes, it is rather early.
For spring breakers, it's early.
Kim, when do they start their online Zoom every day?
They
The
usually
school.
start at 8:55.
Okay.
Yeah, so they both have sessions from 8:55 until 11:25, and then my oldest logs back in the afternoons, Tuesday through Friday. So
Wow. It's a lot of time.
it is, but we're making it. We're almost down to just 2 more months of school left. I'm not counting the days or anything, but in the back of my mind.
Good morning.
Good morning.
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 Morning. Well, I've got 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Did you find the packet, Anne? I'm sorry, I had a phone call from public health about my next shot. Tons of
Okay.
people to admit from the waiting room, which they're still coming in.
Okay, well, we'll wait just a
And
minute.
then you're.
I found the link, so I'm good.
Okay,
Yeah,
excellent.
it just, I can't, it's hard for me to find it on my iPad because I can't search for it, but I managed to find it.
And
So it's okay.
I can put it on the, I can share a screen with it at different times, but that's not why you needed it. Anyway, thank
No, I needed to sign on.
Yes. Oh, well,
The Zoom link.
Stephanie sent that yesterday.
Yes, she did, and I found that.
Excellent. All right.
Yeah.
Well, I think everybody who was trying to get into the meeting has gotten in so far. So this is a great time to start, and I'll put the agenda up on the screen.
Okay, well, I will call the meeting to order then. Stephanie, can you do the roll call, please?
Deb Roche, Gail Kennedy, Ann Robin,
Here.
Georgiana Schuster,
Here.
Sue Suter.
Here.
I just want to note that the first two people must be muted. I didn't hear them. Did you hear them, Stephanie?
No, I didn't. Are they there?
I'm here, Stephanie. This is Deb.
Oh, okay, great.
And who else was the other first person?
Dr. Kennedy. Does anybody see her?
No.
Okay.
Okay, well, hopefully she'll be able to sign in soon. But I think with one person missing, we still have a quorum.
Oh, yeah.
So we can go ahead and I will ask for we've got Zoom instructions. Everybody's here. If you don't, if putting the Zoom instructions up on the screen is not going to help you if you aren't on the Zoom call.
I'm
But
trying to help with the agenda since that's
it
the
helps with the agenda.
yeah, so that people can see what you're approving.
All right. So we've got Zoom instructions, and now we need approval of the agenda. And I will
I
take.
move to approve as presented.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
I guess we have to do roll call because we're still on Zoom.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Ann Robin?
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Deb Roosh?
Yes.
Okay, and we're still missing Gail. Okay, citizen input, public participation. That's the time for that right now. Is there anyone who has
a- I need to go, I'm in Brookings and to make this meeting fully compliant with the Open Meetings Act, but I need to go out to see if anyone has come to provide public input. So I'll be right back.
Okay, we will talk amongst ourselves just a little bit while she's doing that. How's everybody doing?
Good. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So I wrote a letter to the governor yesterday.
Oh yeah?
Did you all read Ed McManus's newsletter?
I'm afraid I didn't read the whole thing.
It was really disturbing.
Yeah. I read it. It is very disturbing. Deb, did you get another one this morning?
I did not. At least not that I'm aware of. I had a whole bunch of emails I haven't gotten to yet, but I didn't see that, anything like that in there.
Okay, are you talking about the February 19th newsletter?
No, it was March 15th, I believe.
No, I haven't read that.
Deb, we haven't gotten one this morning. But you're right. I mean, it's very, very disturbing.
Yeah, it takes a lot to get me to sit down and write a letter, but that did it. So
what did you say in your letter?
I actually shared it with Lynn and Kim yesterday, and I would be happy to share it with all of you. It was really personal. Not that I don't mean that saying that I don't want to share it, the information, but it hit me very personally because my son lived in a state-operated developmental center for almost four long years. He was supposed to be there for 6 to 8 weeks. And Ed's narrative was about physical and emotional abuse of residents by staff at Choate facility in Southern Illinois, in Anna, Illinois. And it really hit home to me. And so I relayed my perspectives about the SOCDs versus community living arrangements to the governor. I shared that with him, and then I shared some personal information about what Dan went through in his 4 years at Shapiro and how much better he is today in a small group home setting close to us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, this sounds like citizen input to me. You're giving citizen input.
Right.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to jump to, we were speaking amongst ourselves, and then I kind of got off on a
you're doing official citizen input. This is good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for doing that.
Yes. 9 workers at Choate have been indicted for felony.
Horrible, just horrible conditions for these people. Torment for them and for their families. It's... We have to do better than that. You know, it's, so I would encourage any of you who are bothered when you read that narrative and hear these circumstances to write to the governor, Scott Bennett, whoever, and express your opinion as well.
I wonder if we should do a letter from the board as a whole, or is it better for us to do it individually?
I would think both.
I would think both also.
Okay.
I think that's appropriate. We had talked about maybe, if it's okay, including Deb's letter to the governor in next month's board packet. If you all haven't seen the context, I can share the email newsletter from Ed McManus. I didn't share it because it was extremely upsetting, and I wanted to just focus on getting us to this meeting. But
I was supposed to have lunch with a dear friend yesterday, and I couldn't even make lunch because it made me sick. Literally, reading that made me sick.
Yep.
So
no one here to provide public input. Maybe other people on the Zoom call have some, but there's no one in person at Brookins here.
So Lynn, if you're able to, and or would like to, or Kim, if you would like to share my letter with the board members in advance of publishing it in the packet, or instead of whatever works best, I'd be happy to share what I wrote with the rest of the board.
Or so I have a question for Stephanie. Could we just send it now and then add it as an addendum to this board packet? To this one.
Yeah, how are you gonna share it now?
I could email it. I could put it in the chat.
Okay.
Deb, is that okay with you?
That's perfectly fine with me. Yeah, I'm happy to share it.
Thanks, Deb. I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I'll put it in the chat. Well,
that was our citizen input. Lynn, do you have chairperson's comments?
You are the chairperson.
Oh, wait a minute. You're the executive director. I'm the chairperson. All right. Well, we're both in chairs, so that's okay. Well, I don't really have any specific comments today, except thank you for being here. And I wonder if maybe I saw in the far future, we might actually be having in-person meetings. And I wonder if we have any guidance on when that could be happening.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No good.
Well, okay. Most of us, I think, are getting access to the vaccine and are getting vaccinated. So that's going to make help with that. And if people need help with getting access to the vaccine, I'm a good person to talk to.
Mm. Thank you, Anne.
Or if you have friends or family or colleagues that are having difficulty getting access to the vaccine, please let me know.
That's great. Thanks, Anne.
Thank you. Okay.
I think pretty soon we're going to be in a much better situation. Right now, the availability of vaccine is the limiting factor, but there was an interview with Dr. Ezeke from the Director of Public Health, Illinois Public Health, yesterday, and she said within a month she's expecting that we will have plenty of vaccine. So that's pretty exciting news.
Yes.
And could be a game changer. Okay, executive director's comments. Yeah.
I was just going to say that's reassuring coming from you too.
Well, I'm not on the inside on availability. So I'm going by what I'm hearing from the people who are above me, who may be a little bit more on the inside at the state level.
Okay.
Okay, Lynn, do you have comments?
Well, yes. So thank you for bringing up the issue of future meetings. We have, we will probably continue to do them primarily on Zoom as long as the state emergency order stands. So under the emergency declaration, the governor's executive order provides for more remote participation than is possible under the normal provisions of the Open Meetings Act. So unless the Open Meetings Act itself is changed, your remote participation is extremely limited and people can't vote if they're attending remotely under normal circumstances. So it would be interesting to see if the state makes permanent any of the changes to Open Meetings Act, not so that you can fully participate remotely, but so that people can participate remotely, like vote and don't have to be in the state, you know. So we'll see what happens, but for now, my plan is to continue to be here. We will be able to have me sitting in the big old Lyle Shields room by myself pretty soon, because the voting there will end on April 5th, and the clerk's office will be able to move the equipment out of Lyle Shields pretty soon after that, and then the room will be available for meetings. So this is important because that's our normal meeting room, and the idea of me being present is to be in the normal meeting room. So it'll get even more normal next month, I hope. Okay. So give, so next month, so I have two really important announcements. One is that next month is when you will have program summaries written by staff. We're all working on those right now. We're learning to use a shared OneDrive. It's very exciting. And those will be finished by your time of your April meeting. And the you'll be doing your own review of the applications and leading the discussion on each application. But I think we would really like, we feel pretty strongly that the tradition of the agencies who have submitted applications being present at those meetings and being ready to answer your questions should continue. Whether you have questions for them or not, we think it's really important for anyone who submitted an application to be able to answer to it, because we as staff are only interpreting what they wrote, just as you are as board members. So their help at this point will be critical. So we'll be probably sending out emails to people to make sure that they attend. But I wanted to say it now. Deb's letter is in the chat. If you're not able to pull it from the chat, we will also have it posted on the county website with this agenda. And maybe we'll put it in next month's board packet too. It's a really good letter. But my big announcement is that we have on this call, I think Mark Driscoll was on this call. He came in at, hi, Mark. But we also have our new Associate Director for Mental Health and Substance Use Disorders is also on the call, and that's Leon Bryson, and he's actually here in the office with me. So
welcome, Leon.
Thank you. Welcome, Leon.
Yeah, welcome.
Hello,
that's everyone. Great.
This is day two.
Day two.
We're introducing him to hundreds of people a day.
Well, baptism by fire, so to speak, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So far, so good, I hope.
Mm-hmm. So far, so good. Still confused in terms of trying to navigate my way around the building, but.
Mm-hmm. That is so
well,
true.
Let me know when you get that figured out, because I still have trouble with that.
Yeah,
I do too.
The buddy.
Leon, maybe you could give us a little of your background.
Sure. I'll take 30 seconds. So my background is in behavioral health. I started out with working as a mental health tech many years ago. And then I worked my way from there to doing research work with the University of Chicago, working with NAMI and just dealing with the effects of mental health and NAMI groups. So I did that for about 3 years. That led me to working at the Mental Health Center, or the Prairie Center, I'm sorry. There I was a youth drug counselor. That led me into working as the director for evidence-based program called Parenting with Love and Limits. Did that for about 10 years here in Champaign County. From there, I went into working for, I worked with Rosecrans for about a year. Then I transitioned into a director position with Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club for about almost 3 years. And that led me to where I am today. So long journey, been here in the county for Champaign County for over 40 years. So I'm dating myself, married, couple of children, two children, two girls, mind you. So that's me. I'm all about service, people first.
That's a great background. We're obviously very lucky to have you.
Thank you. I'm fortunate to be here.
So thank you, Leon. We didn't prepare for the surprise, but maybe you were thinking you'd have to say something. So it's
no problem. Thank you.
Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
I have one other thing to share with you, which is that we have, this is the time of year where we have a couple of National Association conferences that are focused on legislative priorities and you know, what we will say to the federal government. So yesterday's session was about developmental disabilities, and it was hosted by the committee that Kim faithfully attends and that I try to attend when there's not a conflict. The chair of our committee opened the session by saying, you know, we thought of a million great topics that were really relevant to DD, but there's only one that we really need to talk about today, because without a sufficient workforce, we don't have a system of care. So the whole session was devoted to workforce. And during the session, Deb and Kim and I were talking about that letter, and I sent them a screenshot of what was happening at the meeting right when we were talking about it. And this is a quote from a disability rights advocate. He says, "The canonization of direct support professionals is supposed to be high praise, but it's really a reflection of how profoundly their work is misunderstood and devalued. It's a deep disrespect, cleverly disguising itself as an equally deep respect. And it begins with the notion that helping disabled people execute our daily bodily, domestic, and community functions is some of the dirtiest of dirty work. It's like ministering to the untouchables, literally."
Mm-hmm.
I thought, "Oh." And then the speakers continued with that, you know, sort of like the rage is just below the surface, the rage about how direct support professionals don't even have their own occupational code. And so all of the rate setting methodologies that we use across the country, lump them in with other home health aid or you know, like far less credentialed forms of care. So the idea is like, we have an opportunity right now to change that and to create a really robust occupational code for direct support professionals. And then from there, continue to elevate the profession as it should be. So it was a really powerful couple of hours, punctuated by Deb's letter. Anyway, with that, I should let you get on with the meeting.
No, that was very important. Thank you.
Just one question, Lynn. So from this meeting, from this very, very powerful presentation, where does that group go next with that information?
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they have, so you know, the Administration of Community Living, or is it the Agency on Community Living, is a federal agency that is, you know, like it has a hand in pushing for funding for, right? And there might be friends in that office now. There seem to be people who understand the role of DSPs at the ACL now. So there's a little bit of hope that, you know, given what we've all just been through, where we called DSPs heroes for a year, call them heroes and angels, that now we should, like, if we don't start paying them for that, then it's just exploitation and nothing more.
Right.
So the idea is that message is almost to the right ears. But, you know, it doesn't happen until there's legislation and appropriation, right?
Right.
It sounded like one of their action items might be connected with the occupation code. How does that happen?
That's also advocacy. I mean, they have to there's a lot of work around what DSPs have to do on the job. So, you know, their skills and knowledge are well defined, but to get that message to whatever the agency is that creates those standard occupational categories or classifications, to that's going to be an advocacy push.
Okay, well, keep us informed about that and what we can do to move this forward, because this sounds like an opportune moment.
Okay, thank you. Oh, the other thing they talked about a lot was maybe the very best strategy is to empower the DSPs to advocate for themselves.
So, yep.
We can work on that.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Some of them are members of SEIU, aren't they?
I don't know.
Okay. I'm thinking of home services workers for rehab services and aging.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know. And maybe Patty would be able to answer that question for regarding DSCs, direct service providers, but I don't think the DSPs that work with my son and in their agency are at all unionized or actively engaged in any professional advocacy program or certification program.
Okay.
Do you want me to speak to that a little bit? I mean, I you're right. I mean, ours is not unionized. We provide information and opportunities for people to do some advocacy. And one thing that happened just last week through the IARF State Association, IARF, is the Anchor membership became something that is automatic. And so access to lots of resources through Anchor, if you're not familiar with that, I'm sure Kim is, that you see some of that information, and Lynn, that we can share some information with that. So there are action alerts and voter voice opportunities that are shared with staff, and we encourage them to also support individuals that are interested in doing some of that advocacy too. So as those opportunities come up, we share them as they occur. The DSP, you know, they're put on a registry after they go through training. So they're part of a larger group that's recognized by the state as DSPs, but as far as it kind of being neutralized as, you know, I mean, you know, as a mobile advocacy unit that could use some work.
Mm-hmm.
And thank I just you, to Jane. Speak to, I think the other thing, and I saw it later in the agenda, is there's a couple of reasons to feel hopeful, even though we kind of get our high hopes up and then they get shot down over and over and over, that there is some work happening at the state level that appears to feel kind of redundant, but with some renewed energy, in part because Director Stark is a former CEO of a provider agency and definitely advocates from that perspective, which is refreshing. You know, she has a good feel for what people are doing in the field. And I think sometimes asks for input more frequently because of that, and it drives some of her own decisions. Like she might feel a particular way about something and she'll put feelers out and ask for input so that there's strong support to back her recommendation. And that feels really good. So that's one thing that's different. And then the guidehouse recommendations that are coming through, you know, you hope that that will have some weight and value to decisions that are being made. And it's critical. It's critical to, you know, pay wages that are competitive to, and make career options. I mean, you know, we've asked more and more, and it's not just that they're doing more. The work has changed. Years and years ago, you know, people came to day programs and they stayed there. Years and years and years ago. Now there's a lot of community, you know, a lot of community activities, and you need to be able to trust those staff to be alone with people and to make judgment calls that are unsupervised and to be able to act in a moment if somebody's, you know, kind of having a meltdown, or if there's an injury, or if there's, you know, anything that happens in the community that challenges them in a way that they don't have immediate access to staff support or other, you know, other means. So even though there's been this shift in the last 15 years or so of being more accessible in the community and smaller groups and one-on-one support, the wage doesn't support the higher skills and the higher expectations that you have for staff, and your confidence and ability to trust people to work independently is huge. And then the workforce crisis has, you know, just made that even more difficult. So I do, though, with Director Stark and with the guidehouse recommendations, feel like there's some momentum going that advocacy efforts could really influence.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to move on. The next item, and I think this discussion is very good, so I'm happy about this. But I am going to stick to the agenda too. We need to approve the minutes from the February 17 meeting. Everybody have a chance to look at those?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, Stephanie, would you please do the roll call?
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Deb Roosh?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. And the next item is the expenditure list. And I think that is all that we're going to have to do, action items for voting. The rest of it is going to be discussion, if I'm correct about that. So let's do the expenditure list.
Hey, look, I was able to turn it. Magical powers of a PDF.
I'm proud of you.
It's amazing.
I'll make a motion to approve as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. Stephanie, would you call the roll, please?
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Deb Rouge?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. Okay, well, the rest of the meeting is informational, which is very good. And we'll go to the discussion of the process for board review of applications. We have talked about this a little bit, and Lynn's talked about it a little bit in her remarks. Lynn, do you have anything more to say, or Kim, do you have anything more to say about the process? Because this is new for this board.
So we did, when I'm put this together, I tried to mix it up a little bit. Like, this is, I think, Anne, you may have more to say about where this idea comes from than I do. I've just been, you know, kind of managing the process. I tried to assign primary reviewers and then secondary reviewers kind of staggered so that you'd, like, if you wanted to talk about these applications, you could be working with different people on different things, and also tried to balance the number of applications people were looking at. But otherwise, I may not have matched people with things they're super interested in because I wasn't sure. So this is all flexible. I think if you want to do it a different way, that's the reason to have a discussion today. The second thing I did was sent every board member our first draft of the program summary, which is almost it really just lifts big sections from the application itself, does some basic calculations, and then I was making little comments as I went through, like things that I might not care about later, but they caught my attention at the moment. Since that time, so then I sent them to the only what each board member would be working on if this is the approach we take. Sent them to y'all. In case that's easier to look at than the application, you can look at the full applications online, and you can also, we can print or copy them on paper if you'd rather that way, because sometimes the online system is a little difficult to use. But after that, the really important analysis started. So now we have, you know, Kim and Chris and Chandra and Stephanie have all been working on these and contributing to different sections. So the program summaries are going to look very different when you see them in the April board packet than what I sent privately. So if you're interested in where we're at now, you can certainly reach out to any of us. Kim has been like managing, bringing all the things together, and she's been doing most of the analysis. This is the wrong thing. So I should let Kim talk, sorry.
I don't really have anything to add. I've just been working through the list of all the program summaries, and I'm interested to hear what you all have to say about the programs you are going to be reviewing.
Okay, so maybe we should talk just a little bit about the process of what's going to happen. This is based on what we did in the mental health board over the last several years, and I was able to participate in that and thought that the process was very valuable and helped the mental health board move forward and made me feel more connected with the programs that I personally reviewed. So what we're doing is dividing up the programs among people, as you saw in that spreadsheet. And I guess Lynn has said, if you would prefer to do a different program, you can ask to do a different program. But each of us takes several programs as primary reviewer and secondary reviewer. So we're responsible for really more in-depth knowledge about what's going on with that program and what their requests are. And then in the April meeting, we will spend And in the mental health board, we had a time limit for each presentation. I can't remember exactly what that was, 3 minutes or something like that. So you can make a very succinct summary of the main points about each program, and that will educate the rest of the group to help us with our making our allocation votes. Is that a fair analysis, Lynn?
I think you have the mental health board, especially when they started this process, had so many more applications to review that the time was just based on the, like, take a 2-hour meeting and then, you know, take some off the top and bottom for yeah. business, and then divide the rest of the time up by how many applications you had. And over the years, we've changed it a little bit. Like, there are some applications that are the same every year, so they only get a couple minutes, new get a little more. So this is really to be determined. You don't have, you have 20, I think, 19 or 20 to look at, yeah.
Okay, now are we gonna do all of those in the April meeting?
If possible, yeah, because we have to, yeah, we have to have contracts. We have to work on contracts during June.
Okay.
So the best scenario is if you are able to come to agreement about what to fund during May, and that can be, you know, toward, if we need an extra meeting, like the end of May is okay. Just as long as we have enough time to work with the agencies on finalizing contracts in order for people to get paid in a timely fashion. So you could have 2 meetings in April if that's helpful.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should discuss that a little bit right now in terms of process and see what the board is interested in doing, because personally, I like to keep meetings at 2 hours limit because I kind of lose focus after 2 hours. And also on Wednesday, I have clinic after this, so I don't want to exhaust myself. And since we're starting at 9 o'clock, in deference to the late risers in the group, that takes us up to 11. So I would like to suggest that if we need to, we have 2 meetings so that we can have time to really discuss these proposals in a little bit more depth, but that we also give people a suggested time limit for their presentation so they can think about making a succinct presentation. Comments?
I have a question. If we have 2 meetings, would the general public, would one be a study session just for the board, or would it, you know, the extra meeting be open to the public so that the applicants could attend and be asked, you know, we could ask questions of the applicants?
Well, Georgiana, I think that's an excellent, it's an excellent idea to have the second one be a study session, but the public is still invited and they can still participate. That's okay. You all can control the, you know, it still has to be compliant with Open Meetings Act and use the Roberts Rules of Order. So the chairperson can decide how much public input and at what times, even if it's a study session. But I think you're exactly right that's the way to do it, a meeting and a study session. Because you need a meeting in order to make decisions, and we need you to make decisions about things like minutes and claims reports and maybe, you know, a policy change. But for what you're primarily doing is discussion. So the bulk of this could be done in study session. So you have a study session scheduled for next week, but we don't have a topic and we don't have program summaries to discuss. So we could cancel next week's study session and we could pursue April 28 for a second meeting. This gives us a very tight turnaround time for giving you recommendations for funding. So, like, it's like a stay up all night kind of timeline.
Could we have a study session before the next scheduled meeting?
Well, we won't have program summaries done by then.
Oh.
So we're already on a tight timeline to create program summaries because we gave the agencies an extra week to finish the applications, taking a week out of our timeline for analyzing them. So you could have a study session earlier in April, but you won't have program summaries yet.
What are the things that the summaries, that the drafts that you sent out to each of us to look at?
Those are rough drafts. Those are much different from what you'll see in the board packet. Everybody is contributing some analysis to each application, and that's going into the program summaries, and we're editing out the stuff that's just repeated from the application itself. So they'll look really different, but I just wanted y'all to have that initial tool in case it's helpful.
Okay, so Lynn, the timeline is, we have a meeting April 21, and then we would have another study session on April 28. And the expectation from the board would be that we would have the program summaries the week before the meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we as board members would have 1 week to review our individual responsibility agency summaries.
Well, you can look at the applications right now.
We can.
Yeah. You want a preview of staff analysis, you could probably just call Kim.
Yeah. I mean, so we can start working on it now, but the official summary will be available a week before. And then we'll have a meeting April 21st, which will be a regular meeting with business. And we'll have probably about an hour of discussion. And then we'll have a study session on April 28th, which will be mostly discussion. And so we can allow people to make presentations about the programs that they've spent special study on.
So I think that what is nice about this idea is that you, with the Mental Health Board's approach of 4 minutes on each application, there was no time for agencies to answer questions. Mm-hmm. Some of the questions were very simple with really simple answers, but they couldn't provide them. So they had to provide them in writing, which then had to be collated by staff. It created like an additional last minute staff task that, you know, there's also a risk of us getting it wrong rather than you hearing it from the horse's mouth during the meeting. So I think this structure will give you hopefully enough time to engage with the agencies directly.
Okay, so your plan is to have each agency, we'll have a schedule as to which things we're going to be discussing in which meeting, and those agencies will be only invited, but requested to send a representative.
I would like the agencies just to be ready to be at both.
Okay.
Yeah, because you never know, what if a board member thinks about something for a week and has a question the following week? I think it's important that these programs are important, the funding is important, and the process is important. So I think that we should ask people to be available to both, just in case.
Okay.
But we will start with a structure as you suggested. I think this is, you know, we know how to do this. This part will be fine. It'll just be like making sure that I capture your thoughts and the answers that the agencies give from that last meeting into whatever we provide to you for recommendations, because we don't want to slow you down with that process either.
Okay.
If I could just, so for clarification, the April 28th meeting would involve presentations by board members on their assigned applications. And it would also entail a question and answer session with each applicant on the 28th, right? Okay.
And the 21st. So we'd start on the 21st, see how far we get, and then we would finish on the 28th.
Okay.
And we'll probably, Lynn and I will sit down and make a timeline, a suggested timeline, to try to keep people on focus.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other discussion about that process? Are people okay with it?
I hope you'll, yes. Oh, thanks, Anne. When the Mental Health Board does this, the primary reviewer and the secondary reviewer, do they usually do it together, or each one does it, and is there any communication between the primary reviewer and the secondary reviewer?
Well, I think each one does their individual review, and then according to the Open Meetings Act, it's perfectly okay for two people to talk to each other about a substantive issue. So you could talk to the other person and say, okay, I have a question about this, or I think that is important. What do you think? And then you can come to some kind of agreement on that.
Okay.
Okay, but then the primary reviewer is the one that does the presentation.
Okay. Thank
you. Unless they're sick or can't show up, then the secondary one does it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, people have done it differently. They've been doing that for a while. So it includes a whole lot of different mental health board members who've approached it sometimes as a team. You know, it's just kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good question. Okay, any other questions or comments about that process? All right, I'll go to successes and other agency information. Always our favorite part of the meeting.
Hi, this is Annette. Sorry, I can't find the raise your hand, so I'll just do it physically.
Hi, Annette.
Good morning. Just two brief things. The podcast team Beyond Ability is working on their next podcast, and they take it very seriously. They're enjoying it, but you know, they really want to have a connection with people we should know in the community. In addition to that, they're also having fun. They have started listening to British cooking shows. And one of the things they find the most interesting is that as they're watching it during the daytime, it's actually night, nighttime in England. So in a way, it really kind of helps them expand their world. I think unless you've traveled, you know, that whole time and distance is kind of hard to understand. So they're really getting a kick out of the accents and the food and the fact that it's nighttime. And then the soap making team is getting new scents and expanding into wax melts, very successful online sales. And we're looking at being part of the farmers market one time per month. We're investigating ways to keep the wax melts from melting in July and August, but they're really looking forward to having more people have access to their product. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll speak, Sarah Perry at DSC. I just wanted to kind of comment on our vaccine clinics and the progress we've made in community living program and the outreach and getting our residents vaccinated. So currently we have 47 out of 49 residents in the SILA program, which is 96%, have received both shots. We're very pleased with that. We did have two guardians opt out. So those are wonderful numbers to see and helps us move forward on some opportunities back into the community. For our community living program, we have 42 out of 66 individuals that have received their first dose, which is 64%. And we have 32 out of those 66 that have already received the second dose, which is 49%. Several of them are scheduled in the upcoming 2 weeks. And we are feeling a little bit better and reassured that the amount of vaccines are increasing, making it a little bit easier to get folks in. It's been a trial and error system to reach out and access them. And then our CU Independence apartment building is 20 out of 22 of the residents there at 91%. So feeling really excellent with those numbers and feeling some sunshine at the end of a very long year and hopeful that we can move forward and get back to doing what we love best.
Thank you.
This is Patty. I just wanted to piggyback on that too. We hosted two vaccine clinics with the support of Walgreens, and they came on site, and we had two afternoons at two different day program sites. And, you know, they were very complimentary about how everything was kind of stationed and executed. But our staff vaccine rate is a little over 70%. We, at the time that we did those two vaccine clinics, since then, I think Julie Pride, who is a gift to this community, I'm so impressed with what she's done in Champaign County, that she calls it vaccine hesitant. We are seeing some folks now that are starting to show interest. We're encouraging people routine, you know, on a weekly basis. There's lots of opportunities in the community at different locations and stuff for them to go ahead and receive their vaccine. So we've got some more kind of jumping on board. But what we've found is really a lot of the people that were anxious and nervous about actually contracting COVID are also the ones that are hesitant to get the vaccine. So, you know, just kind of the whole idea of the COVID-19 is difficult. But we are seeing, you know, some slow numbers coming in with more people. We've been reaching out to families for people that aren't really actively participating beyond like a one-on-one support right now to see if families are vaccinating. That has been a bit of a sore subject. I think that with so many of our residents, especially in the Scylla program, becoming vaccinated, I think families expected things just to kind of open up considerably for kind of a back to normal, and we're just not there yet. I mean, we're still following guidance from the state and the CDC and being cautious. And if family members have not vaccinated at home and we don't know how they're spending their time, we're still being, you know, kind of cautious about that, because there are a few residents that didn't do it. And there's still some unanswered questions about being able to be a carrier and, you know, where people are at with the vaccine. So I think that we have made a lot of progress. We're really excited. We're opening up opportunities, but it's certainly not, you know, floodgates are open. So as Sarah said, you know, sunny days ahead, but it does feel good to be this far along in the process. And we are hearing that there are a lot of other provider organizations that only have 20% and 30% interest from staff, which is baffling to me. But so we're feeling really fortunate that people are interested in and following through with getting the vaccines. Thanks.
Thank you.
I can go ahead.
Yeah.
Or you go
okay.
ahead now.
Thank you, Becca. Sorry. So I just want to inform everybody that on March 5th, we had our advisory, and we usually offer that advisory for PSW. And on that advisory, we had Julie Pride as our guest speaker. And during that time, Julie Pride was answering questions and actually offered to anyone on the call the possibility of emailing her personally to get the shot. So a lot of the people on the call took that advantage and emailed her personally, but she also extended to everybody that anyone that's connected to PACE could get the vaccination and the COVID vaccination. And so Julie and I worked together, and I emailed everybody that's connected to the PSW program to offer them to be able to get the shot. So so that was a Friday, and by next week I was compiling a list for her, and I sent a final list to Julie for the people that are interested in getting the COVID shot. And she was so wonderful that she worked everyone on that list to be vaccinated, and I have a lot of reports that a lot of people that was vaccinated this Saturday and stuff. So I was, and then she continued to say that answered question during that time, and also offered that if anyone individually is not comfortable discussing their questions and stuff, she offered her email, and I heard from a lot of people that she responded to those questions. So I have to say that a lot of people that is connected to PACE was able to partner up Illinois Respite and Community Choices, consumers and PSWs and respite worker reach out to PACE, and we were able to put together a list and was sent out to Julie. And that was like a great opportunity for a lot of people that has responded to me that they weren't able to get the shot, but now they are able to get connected with CUPHD. So thank you.
All right. Great.
Oh, it is great.
Hi, Hi, I'll just jump in. This is Becca from Community Choices. And again, thank you for Mel for including us in that recent kind of round of vaccine clinics. We'd also been working with public health a lot to create some opportunities for our members to get vaccinated, and especially family caregivers and PSWs kind of earlier on due to some of that state advocacy, allowing them to be kind of in those earlier priority groups. That's been going well, and it's been nice to be able to be the bearer of some good news and getting information out to people on that regard, and kind of get things off to a better start this spring than they were a year ago. So I also just wanted to share a couple of things. We've continued to offer our sort of virtual Zoom groups for our members a couple times a day. We've also in the last couple of weeks started offering some member-led sort of workshops. Some of the members that had been coming a lot really wanted to start sharing some of their own interests and skills in those groups. So I think it was about a week ago, week and a half maybe, one of our members, she was very good topic for the time that we're in, but she ran a letter writing workshop. And so I think there was about seven people that went, and all of them wrote letters to people. A couple of them we received at the office, which was a nice surprise. But then there's also some other ones coming up. One member, she's a big music buff, and she's going to be sort of talking about the history of some different bands. She's starting with Tool, for those of you who were into sort of, you know, some 90s rock music. Mm-hmm. And then we've got in April, hopefully the weather will hold, one of our members is going to do a baseball workshop outside. So we're really excited about those, just kind of seeing how those opportunities have evolved, and also how people have really sort of started really connecting with each other and like listening to each other and building in their own opportunities to share information and give each other what they need. So that's been, I think, one of the great silver linings of all of this.
Thank you.
I also wanted to share just real quick, this is Heather Lovingston from DSC. I just wanted to share a tidbit about the individual family support program that I oversee, the day program. There was two individuals in particular that really struggled when we had to temporarily shut down and not offer services. And especially with meeting with one family like a month ago, when we were able to resume services because they had that funding and didn't have other supports, the mother was able to keep her job and to stay afloat. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thanks. Thank you. Any other reports?
This is Patty again. I forgot to mention, we also have a new employee that I wanted to introduce who's on the call. Josh Cornwell is our new CFO, and I believe he might be in week two as opposed to day two, like Leon. So if you haven't met, I think an email went out to the staff kind of introducing him, but this is his first CCDDB meeting, and he'll be joining MHB this evening.
Yes.
All right, thank you.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, nice to meet everyone.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for all of that input. That helps us keep connected with what's going on at the direct service level, and we really appreciate it. I'm turning the page to old business. We've got a briefing memorandum about unmet residential support needs. Kim or Lynn, did you want to make any comment about that?
Well, Anne, you were right. That success is the best part of the meeting. So now we're back to the hard stuff. You know, this is pretty, I think Kim and Katie Harmon really like, they're just so good at getting information together really fast. And so this is, you know, it's a fairly straightforward update. It doesn't result in any breakthroughs at all. I'm concerned that all the things that seem obvious, like make the pay better using our local, these are all things that seem obvious. They would absolutely help, but we can't do them. You know, I mean, maybe we do them and risk getting sued, but like, I mean, what's at stake is not just us taking a liability if we were to go a route like that, but also that it creates a liability for whatever the agency is. Whoever is officially the Medicaid provider can like lose it all if we do something rash and it can be seen as Medicaid supplementation. I know there's not, you know, an army of Medicaid supplementation officers going around shutting people down, but it has happened. It is against the law. So we really are stuck. Like, the obvious thing to do is raise the pay. We have money. We should be able to help raise the pay. But since that's there's sort of a block for that, you know, other ideas have been, you know, incentive payments for completing a certification program. These certification programs are actually like a stunning, great idea for all kinds of reasons. It may be tricky for us to pay people directly to participate in them, but I still think there's potential. And the states, yes, in my sessions yesterday, the states of Ohio and Kansas presented on certification programs that they've developed for DSPs that have been really successful, but they're sort of like meeting more aims than just our real problem. Like, our real problem is we don't have a sufficient workforce. And maybe the reasons for it are it doesn't pay enough and there's a lot of stress in the job. The competencies are not well understood and not celebrated and not compensated fairly. It is basically an exploitation situation. So those are really hard problems to solve. But in Ohio and Kansas, they both also were worried about high school graduation rates and introduced a DSP certification program within high schools as an alternative route to graduation. So they're trying to meet two really different, really important needs. And so they've had some limited success with that. But still, the idea, the curriculum ideas are amazing. They have these badges for developing a specific competency, and then you have that badge or certification no matter who employs you, so it, you know, raises your status as a DSP. It's a way of kind of creating that career ladder that we've talked about and never really found a way to do. Still missing is the lavish pay. So, you know, this memo is just a collection of really dire facts that show us our problem is real and it's here and it's everywhere, and then maybe there's help coming, but probably not. And the COVID relief bill FMAP enhancement, I think, turns out to be 10% instead of 7.35, but it's still temporary. So we're talking about permanent long-term supports and services. Temporary increases may not be enough of an enticement for the state of Illinois to play. Maybe the letter from Deb Rouge will be. I got that letter, I'd change my ways.
I don't know, but it really got my goat. I mean, I don't know.
I don't have anything else to add about this memo, so I'm going to stop sharing and let you discuss.
I just wanted to say thank you. I know that some of the requests for the survey came from me, so I layered some work on you all, but I really appreciate the work that I think probably Kim did in interacting with DSC and Community Choices. Thank you, and thank them for their input. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, they responded fast, and Kim, it is really to Kim's credit that these things get done right after the meeting. So.
I think it's really helpful and an excellent update on what's going on. Lynn, I noticed under next steps and the Iowa certification curriculum and the ones you talked about today, Kansas, and then about whether it's an appropriate use of our money. Who determines that? Would that be the attorney?
Well, and I think when I ask the attorneys questions, they're going to tend to answer no. But, right? But, you know, my job is to protect you all and to protect the fund and to make sure that, you know, we're on track. So I could do that. I think that we've had a conversation like that, Kim and I, with both of the attorneys, one for DDB and one for Mental Health Board, about appropriate uses of each fund. And there's a chance that this is more this is easier to do under the mental health board rules. And they do have some money that they spend on DD services or toward the DD system each year. So I have been leaning toward proposing something with their DD dollars as opposed to with yours. But I haven't talked to attorneys. That is exactly what that means, though. It's an appropriate use from your perspective, you know, as representatives of the public and the managers of this fund. And also, do our attorneys believe it is within your authority? Yeah.
To me, the other question is too, if we shore up benefits, pay some kind of incentivize some way for our local DSPs, we are letting the state shirk their job.
Yeah, really needs systemic change, not, you know, I mean, what we can do is good for as far as it goes, but I agree with you. What you need is to change the system.
So then maybe a good place to start, and it's free of cost, is for me to share out the resources that I found yesterday, which are four DSPs. There are three or four journals that have been developed just for them. And they're written by DSPs too. So it's really like allowing the field to advocate for itself and support itself. So if we're serious about empowerment, then maybe that's a nice place to start. And I can do that with Kim's help. I can share that information out to the people who may need it. I mean, it's just, that's our free step for today. Big next steps, I'm just really not sure. I think we're 100% confident. And I like what you said, Deb. It's a large systemic problem.
I think, I agree. I don't want to let the state off the hook. However, I think, you know, I think these are kind of urgent situations. I don't know. I don't know if the state is going to help out. That would obviously be the best thing for the systemic changes. But if we don't think those are going to be coming pretty soon, I don't know if we should maybe take a look at that.
Yeah, so I guess we need to think about what we can do to be potentially become a model, you know, and market that.
Yeah.
And market that model so that it garners interest beyond our community and beyond our region. And I don't have anything to add to that. I don't know how, but
that's a great idea. I think that also looking at what other states are doing and maybe build off of some of those successes is something maybe we can look at too.
Okay, I think that this is good discussion, and I hope we will continue this discussion in the immediate future, because this is seems like it's not only a terrible need, but it may be an opportunity to make some changes right now. Okay, schedules, we talked about the most immediate. We're going to do no study session on March 24, and we're going to add a study session on April 28th.
Okay.
Will that be at 9 a.m.?
Is that all right for y'all? I've just emailed the county to
probably see. Good to do it that way.
Okay.
And we'll plan on both of those meetings being about 2 hours. Just for people's schedule. Okay, acronyms and glossary for information. CCMHB input, do we have anything?
They have a meeting this evening with roughly the same agenda. we're they have about twice as many applications to review. So I think we will have a similar process discussion because it is really, it's just a lot and it's all important. So you don't want to short shrift anybody.
And staff reports?
We typically defer the staff reports while we're working on program summaries because it really does take a kind of a sustained focus. So we won't have them in April either.
Well, then we'll just take this opportunity to thank the staff for their hard work. We know you're there, we know you're working, and we appreciate it. And welcome to Leon.
Yep.
Any announcements?
And I just, on the expo, steering committee decided to have an ad hoc committee to work on sort of two tracks, whether we can, the expo can be in person or not. And that's one, that would be one track, but at the same time, be looking at doing it virtually again.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other announcements or comments before we adjourn? Well, I want to thank everybody for a very substantive and to the point meeting, and I appreciate all of your participation. I personally have a lot to think about, and I'll look forward to meeting with you all again in April. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Get vaccinated if you haven't been. Refer people to me if you need to.
That's great.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.